Welcome to The Rink, a hockey podcast by hockey bloggers for hockey fans. I'm James Tapeleg Graylian. You do not have to adjust your iPod or computer or MP3 player or whatever as you listen to The Rink on. Even though it doesn't have the regular intro music, this is a special edition of The Rink, episode 21.5. As some of you who listen to the podcast know, I'm on a West Coast hockey tour through California, Oregon, and Washington State, and seeing all of the hockey teams along the way that play there, the professional, junior, minor. And so far, I've been able to link up with hockey bloggers and podcasters and able to talk to them about their teams that they follow, which was part of the original mission statement of The Rink, something I haven't been able to keep up with as much. But being able to talk to them at games, after games, has been a great experience. I was able to take a recorder along with me and with varying degrees of audio quality, talk to Connie from the King's World podcast, Jibble Scribbits, who I like to call Jib, from the blog Jibble Scribbits and a Colorado Avalanche blog, and PJ Swenson from Sharks Page. So first up is recorded right before the LA Kings game, Armenian Heritage Night, against the Atlanta Thrashers. I talked to Connie from King's World Podcast.
All right, well, before the game today, Armenian Heritage Night, not that I'm seeing much Armenian around, getting a chance to sit down and talk to Connie from King's World Podcast. Hi.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm great, how are you?
I'm good. How is your West Coast swing coming along?
It's fun. It was interesting last night. So far, the home teams are 1-2.
All right.
And the losers so far, of course, being the Kings and the Ducks last night, got their backsides handed to them.
It's too bad you weren't here on Saturday for the Edmonton game.
And that's the thing. I thought, I won't go because it won't be, you know, I'd be pushing my luck trying to get to too many games. And that was the one to see, wasn't it?
It was. There were only four goals total in regulation. Then it went to shootout. There were 41 hits just from the Kings.
Wow.
There were 24 penalties total. Lots of fights, lots of scrums. You missed a good one.
I missed a good one, even though it was a Kings loss, right?
It was, but it was in the shootout, so I mean.
And so you got a point out of it, which, you know, that's helping out the Kings a lot right now.
Yeah, which puts us now in 5 points out of the eighth spot in the Western Conference, but sixth, seventh, and eighth place are at 61 points, so it's
very tight. Still anyone's
right
game. The Kings really, I mean, they were kind of looking like they were going to be the joke team of the Western Conference, and it turns out that my Avalanche are actually the ones who are turning out to be the joke right now. What's really been spurring them on? I mean, what has been the big turnaround from the beginning of the season with them?
I think it's just been the refocusing from the coaches. Terry Murray's coming in with the defensive-minded coaching style, and then we brought in Mark Hardy, and, you know, old-school King player. He's already been here before, and he's been working with the defense, and I think we're number one right now in shots against in the whole league with, I think, like 26 to 27.
Mm-hmm.
And it's regularly on a nightly basis where we'll toss up 30 to 35 shots against, and then our goaltender will see 25, 26, 27 shots. And it's a rarity when the other team gets over 30 shots.
That's and you're talking about goaltending, and of course the big move of Jason LaBarbera out. I was talking with Tom Luongo, my podcast partner, about the fact that LaBarbera is gone, that Garon was gone, and those two were supposed to be the big tandem. And now, I mean, how do you feel about Quick? Is he solidly the Kings goaltender? Is he the goaltender of the future? Or
I wouldn't say that exactly. He's actually been kind of a surprise. We were thinking that this season, I guess, was going to be Barbs and Eric Erisberg, but once Erisberg got injured and then we shipped off LaBarbera for an amazing seventh-round pick, I didn't think we'd get anything back for him. No, I'm serious. When you look at Manny Legacy over in St. Louis, he got waived.
That's true.
Nobody wanted him, but we actually got a pick for Barbs. I was pretty amazed.
I don't know. I thought for considering what he used to be thought of as a couple of years ago.
Yeah, in the AHL.
Yeah, and even when he first came to the Kings, as kind of that 1A, 1B tandem, mm-hmm. that a single seventh round pick just didn't seem like much at all. But I mean, I guess if you guys are happy.
Yeah. I mean, watching the team from game to game, I'm pretty happy with that. Jonathan Quick has been a surprise. I don't think anybody was expecting anything that even resembled a solid goaltending performance out of him for this season, especially. I mean, our future, the quote-unquote future of the franchise, is Jonathan Bernier, and he's doing okay behind a really young team out in Manchester, the AHL affiliate, and I mean, I'm happy with him. I'm okay with him trying to get the wins down, trying to get the team over 500 into the playoffs in the AHL. If we have Jonathan Quick here and he's performing, then why not? I mean, he hasn't been labeled the number one, but at the same time, Eric Erzberg hasn't been labeled the number one. So we do have a back-to-back coming up Wednesday and Thursday of this week. So I think Erzberg is going to get one of those games.
Well, it's good to have some competition for that. Dustin Brown's been doing pretty well. I mean, everybody loves Dustin Brown around here.
Everybody loves Dustin Brown.
I wouldn't say anything bad about him. I get my butt kicked because I left.
He is our captain for a reason. Yeah. He's been doing so well. Every game, he's the one you notice on the ice. I mean, there's Kopitar, and he's great. Big body, big presence, but when you want to get the dirty work done, you go to Dustin Brown.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, and Kopitar's been great this season. It seemed like I heard a lot about him last season. This season, maybe it's cooled off a little bit, but maybe that's just because of the beginning of the season, is it? And how that all is shaking out.
I think it's more of him trying to, because he came out and said he had spent a little while getting used to the new style, the new system, defensive-mindedness, and everyone's thinking, oh, it's a big contract extension he's got. But it really wasn't it. It was other teams figuring out that they needed to shut down Kopitar. Like, he's the number one guy. They got to go for him. So this season, they were focusing on him more. That's number one. And number two, he's learning a new style of play. And so 1+1 equals he's not as offensively productive as he was last season.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
How are the Kings doing on defense? They seem to be doing so-so without Rob Blake.
Hey, I love Rob Blake. My favorite player since I was a kid. But our defense is doing so well. And, I mean, even if we don't make the playoffs this season, I'm okay with that because we're doing so much better defensively from right now than we were a year ago. A year ago, it was atrocious. But now we have Drew Doughty, just amazing. Jack Johnson is back. Can you talk about a scary, scary defensive pairing? Even though they're young, they're scary.
Yeah.
And Sean O'Donnell, the oldest guy on the team, but he's still awesome. And Kyle Quincy picked off waivers from Detroit for free.
Yeah.
For free. That's amazing. We're just looking really good. We got Matt Green out from Edmonton when we shipped off Vladimir Vishnovsky. And from that, we also got Jared Stoll. I didn't realize how much of a face-off beast Jared Stoll was.
Really?
He's so good. And he's only helped improve our other centers in the face-offs. I mean, Michael Hontzius and Anze Kopitar are so good in the face-off this year. It's ridiculous. I'm really happy.
My final question is, are the Kings going to make the playoffs?
I'm not going to say either way, because if I do say yes, they might just go downhill from here and not make the playoffs. Because, I mean, they're still 5 points out. The Western Conference is ridiculous right now. But at the same time, I wouldn't be upset if they didn't make it. Because, like I said, they've improved so much in terms of goaltending, defense, and offense. I mean, we're so young, but we're improving steadily. I mean, every game you see, the stats are just getting more and more consistent. And so, if they do make the playoffs, it's going to be nuts. And I'm just going to, you know, laugh in everybody's faces who said, oh, Dean Lombardi doesn't know what he's doing. Terry Murray doesn't know what he's doing. No, he does know what he's doing, which is why we're doing so well. I mean, people who don't watch the Kings on a nightly basis or on a game-to-game basis don't understand what the Kings are doing. But when you actually look at the team, it's amazing what they've done.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're on the East Coast and you're reporting on the New York team, a.k.a. national media,
yeah,
and you talk about the Kings, I'm just like, you, according to what you're saying, that's telling me that you have no idea what the Kings are doing, you know? And it's That's why I hate rumors. That's why I hate everything national associated with the Kings, just because you're not looking at what the Kings are actually doing. So if they do make the playoffs, that's wonderful. But if they don't, I'm not going to hang my head.
Well, that's why people should be listening to your podcast. What's what is the give me the web address of your podcast?
It's kingsworldpodcast@podbean.com.
Okay.
Or you can go find us on Facebook.
Okay.
Or we're also on MySpace. And then I do the podcast with Marie. And my blog is A Queen Among Kings, and hers is Purple Crushed Velvet. So you can go and then you can find the links to that on either of those two blogs.
Excellent. Well, Connie, awesome. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Awesome.
I'm glad that Connie had a good time. I did too. Next up is Jibble Scribbits, as I like to call him, Jib, from the blog Jibble Scribbits. And of course, you can find a link to Connie's podcast and Jibble Scribbits blog at my website at this at www.rinkpodcast.com. Location recording is always a bit of a challenge, but this had to be one of the odder locations that I have ever recorded in.
It's the strangest place in the world, I think, for an interview is in the front seat of a Ford Ranger outside of HP Pavilion after the Sharks just beat the Edmonton Oilers 4-2. And it's interesting company as well. I've got John Swenson's driving and navigating through traffic and Jibble Scribbits of the blog Jibble Scribbits. I'm going to call you Jib.
That's fine.
Okay. I wanted to talk to you about some Avalanche while I have you here. Jib, of course, lives in San Jose, but huge Avs fan, straight out of Colorado. I think one of the funnest things that you did this year was your campaign, I would say, of I Believe in Peter Budaj.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about that these days?
Well, just shut it down a couple days ago. he's been pretty inconsistent this mm-hmm. year. I think the point of the campaign was to I didn't want to go into the season with the goalie controversy. I thought if we... You know, the worst thing you can do is go into a season with a goalie controversy, let him prove himself, and then, you know, then get on him. But, you know, he had a rough start. The first three or four games were just awful. And then, you know, he never really recovered from that. I think he's got some confidence. I think he has problems keeping confidence, and I think that's his biggest problem. So, and he definitely had that this season, and it showed in his inconsistency.
Which is kind of funny because at the same time, we are seeing inconsistency from Andrew Raycroft, the guy everybody kind of expected to fail, who came out of the gate pretty hot. And even I know Adrian Dater was saying, hey, Raycroft should be the go-to guy, and all of a sudden he's starting to lose it now.
Yeah, you know, I think I think Raycroft got a little overrated because people were a little upset with Budaj, and you know, when he had that good record, he was something like 9-2 or something like that for a little while. You know, you look at the teams that he had gone against, and he hadn't really gone against anybody any good, and the Avs were beating the teams that were below him at the standings at that point, and Raycroft happened to be starting those games. If you looked at the way he was playing, I think he's been inconsistent all year. He's had a good game and then a bad game. So both goalies have really been inconsistent, which is kind of a cliche word at these times, but I think it really fits.
Well, it's also kind of the question, you know, which leads right into the defense. Is it that the goalies are being inconsistent, or are the defense leaving them in the dust right now? That's a good question, I think.
It's a good question, and I think it has to be both. I mean, the defense has really not played up to snuff this year. And if you look at, I've been looking at, you know, the statistics on goalie save percentage, and if you look at the bottom ones, there's Osgood, but that's just because he sucks. And then there's, you know, most of the goalies at the bottom of the save percentage statistics are all on bad teams. And, you know, you can look at it two ways, that bad teams have bad goalies or that bad teams have bad defense, and the goalie's save percentage reflects that.
Mm-hmm.
I've always said save percentage is not the best statistic. It's the best one out there, but it's not a really good one. And I think that shows when you look at stuff like that. But the goalies have been inconsistent. I think the defense has been well below what it should be performing at. The Avs have good defenders, and they're just not playing well. They're just not playing as a team.
No, and right now with
now that it was announced today that John Michael Lyles was going to be out with a hand injury. It was announced very recently, which means that the Avs probably knew for about a week, knowing how they are. But now we have Adam Foote back. So it seems like a trade-off, but certainly a stylistic trade-off.
Yeah, Adam Foote has, I think he took some heat this year, just because the Avs defense wasn't playing well, and he's kind of the leader of it, so he's going to take some heat. But I still think he's the Avs' best pure defenseman.
Yeah.
Which I guess isn't really saying a whole lot this year, but he is really good still. I think he's been a little underrated this season. It does hurt losing Lyles. I think Lyles has been the Avs' most improved player this season. I think he's really earned. He got a new contract and he's really earned it. He's leading the Avs in defensive points, and I think he's been pretty good this season. So it'll hurt, but he's only out for 5 or 6 games. You never know with the Avs training staff, but
three games and then all of a sudden it's 2 months.
Adam Foote was, making the road trip and day to day, and 2 months later he returned. So right. You never can really tell, but supposedly Lyles is supposed to be back.
Yeah, and at least the trade rumors have kind of quieted down, not only because of his contract length, but also because of his play. Yeah. The rest of the defense, though, seems I know that people are kind of calling for trades. What do you think? Anything? Do you see anything happening? Is there any reason to at this point?
Yeah, I think so. I think the Avs really need. They've had 6 guys on the blue line who I thought were going to be pretty good. I've always thought Clark was a little overrated, and I think his contract was just awful at the time, and I've said that many times. But he's not the worst defenseman in the world, but. I think he can help some other teams, and I think he's a goner.
Yeah.
If the Avs can get rid of him just because of his contract, I think Leopold's gone because he's the combination of his contract and his ability to puck move really makes him he's worth more trading to the Avs than he is on the ice, because he's going to get a raise this summer, and the Avs aren't going to be able to afford it by paying every defender they have more than $3 million a year. That's just not going to cut it. So they really need to start bringing up some of their young guys, and they're going to have to get rid of at least one. I think they should get rid of 2 of their defenders if they can get good value for them in return.
Yeah. Moving up front now, of course, Paul Stastny's coming back. It looks like he's on the road trip, the current road trip, so hopefully his broken arm is ready to is all healed up. I know that those aren't any fun to come back from. Of course, there's the injury to Joe Sakic, and last year the playoff injuries and all that. Injury is all we heard, it seems like, for the Avalanche. Up front, has been disappointing. I don't know how you felt about it. Where do you see the Avs? Maybe even at the end of the year, are they going to try and dump somebody? Do you think that maybe this is just a team that needs a few people back, even in the long term at this point?
I think this team could be close. I keep looking at their salary cap structure, and I think they're going to be good this summer. I think they're going to have some money to make some moves and really shore up some depth. They may not, depending on what happens at the trade deadline, they may not have the cap space to really make a splash. But I think there's going to be some good forwards and stuff out there that could really help the Avs. I think that's been their Achilles heel all season, is their lack of depth. And you talk about the injuries, and that's really played into it. If the Avs had a deeper lineup, the Sakic and Stastny injury would have hurt, but, maybe they would be sitting at 10th right now instead of last, with some with some depth. But they don't have the depth, and that's really, every team has injuries. Luongo was hurt for a little while for Vancouver. Brodeur was hurt for most of the season for New Jersey, and, other teams have had significant injuries too, and they've been able to overcome them. The Avs haven't, and that's a lack of depth.
That's true. It's always one of those teams that seems like over the last couple of years that the elements have been there on paper. That you have you'd have two good scoring lines. You'd have a grind line, you know, and then one line just to throw at them to see, you know, to mix things up. But it never seems to play out that way.
No, you know, when you get to injuries and, you know, the unpredicted, you know, I mean, look, you know, last year injuries, okay, well, maybe they're kind of an excuse. The Avs had a lot of injuries last year. But if you keep playing that, you know, that excuse every year, well, at some point you're just not planning for them.
Yeah.
And you've got to figure that, you know, you're going to get players injured. It's an 82-game hockey season. People are going to get hurt on
That's
every
true.
Team. You know, and good players are going to get hurt. That's just the nature of the game. Sakic's been, you know, hurt three times in the last 10 years. He's missed significant game time. And, you know, that's just the way it is with hockey players. You can't just cross your fingers and hope that people aren't going to get hurt, because it's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's true. All right, lightning round. Three quick questions for you. First off, is this the last year of Joe Sakic?
Yes, he's done.
All right. Tony Granato, pass or fail? For the season, sorry.
For the season, fail.
Fail.
Big fail.
Well, I'll tack on another one for the Tony Granato. Are they going to cut his time short, or do you think they'll let him come back next year?
I think they're going to give him another season. Unfortunately, I maybe it's just the pessimist in me, but I think they're going to give him another season.
Ian LaPerriere, re-sign him or no?
I say re-sign him. But I could see him being traded at the trade deadline because he's pretty valuable.
I hope not. He seems to get the second biggest cheers behind Joe Sakic.
I hope not
at the top
either,
of the game.
I think he's pretty valuable too, so I could see him being moved.
Well, Jib, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Me
and
too.
Of course, your blog is at jibblescribbits.blogspot.com.
Yeah, that's correct.
And I'm gonna definitely put a link to it, of course, on the webpage at www.ringpodcast.com. Thanks a lot,
it.
And John, thank you for driving. Excellent job, sir.
No problem.
The next day, John Swenson of Sharks Page and I sat down to a very different location to talk about the San Jose Sharks.
The background noise that you're hearing is open practice for the Sharks, I guess an optional. We got here just a little bit late. I'm sitting here talking with John Swenson of Sharks Page, an excellent Sharks blog and a photography nut. Last night, John and I were at the Sharks game that ended 4-2 against the Edmonton Oilers. That was a hell of a game last night.
One of the top five games of the year, HB Pavilion.
Yeah, the first period to me looked kind of sloppy, but then once things started getting pretty physical, the Sharks seemed to turn everything up a bit.
I think Edmonton tried to intimidate them physically, and it actually kind of lit a fire under San Jose.
Mm-hmm. I remember last night after Claude Lemieux left the game in the second, he came back. Of course, he was just 5-10. His hand seemed like he was giving him some problems. And here at practice, it kind of looked that same way as well. He's kind of that polarizing figure of hockey, but the Sharks fans seem to love him.
Yeah, I think what they're looking for him here, like a veteran role to kind of tighten up defensively. You know, he knows where to be. He knows where the puck's going to be. He knows how to put himself between players and the puck and what angles to take. So they're not really looking at him to be an agitator. They're kind of looking for him to, you know, help tighten up defensively. It's an area where they've struggled a little bit at times.
Yeah, it sure doesn't seem like the Sharks have many struggles, although they have on this recent road trip. Of course, everybody's heard about the flu that they've had, but you were telling me that they have a bunch of injuries right now that, outside of being of the Sharks fandom, if you're just watching the stats, you really don't hear a lot about.
Yeah, their third and fourth lines are kind of hit really hard with injuries. The guy slated for the third line center on the checking line was Torrey Mitchell. He broke his leg over here in training camp running into a post. And he was replaced by Marcel Gotch, who got injured on their five-game road trip at Buffalo. So he was replaced by Thomas Fleehall, who got injured, I believe, against New Jersey. And then last night, Patrick Marleau moved off the top line and was centering the third line. And Claude Lemieux played on the fourth line. I guess according to you, he might have hurt his hand a little bit on that fight. So they had a little bit of injuries on the defense with Blake and Lukowicz, and so they've had some call-ups bouncing back and forth between the AHL and San Jose.
Yeah, they have a lot of. I mean, Blake's back. It looks like he was playing last night, and I didn't see he wasn't wearing the chin protector. He wasn't wearing it today in practice. So. Mm-hmm. that's good news for him. Blake has been kind of a surprise considering his last two seasons in L.A. He's really turned his game on quite a bit. The defense really doesn't look bad. They didn't look great in the first period last night, but neither did the Oilers. I could imagine that they were probably trying to find their game a bit last night.
The Sharks really have an underrated defense. You've got Blake, who's paired with Vlasic, and Vlasic might be the most improved defenseman in the NHL this season, or at least, you know, one of the top five. And Blake's really kind of just done what the Sharks needed. He hammers shots on goal. I mean, look at the game log, and you'll see 6 shots a game, 8 shots a game, 7 shots a game, and it's like a howitzer. And he adds kind of a physical element, and he, you know, a veteran defenseman. It's a really good pairing. And then you got Boyle, who was with Lukowicz for most of the season. And Boyle's just been incredible. And then they have the third pairing is Christian Erhoff and Douglas Murray, who I thought last year were the best, most improved defensemen last year. And they got four puck-moving mobile defensemen and then 2 kind of stay-at-home defensemen. And it's a really, really deep blue line. And so they just need everyone to get back healthy. And, you know, that's kind of when they're going to start ticking back up in the standings again.
Yeah, the power play looked really good last night. There were times when they put a guy in front of the net, and there were times when they just spread out to spread out to the outside and just kind of form your circle around it. There were times when, of course, the crowd wanted, the crowd always wants the shoot, but they looked like they really knew what they were doing out there.
Yeah, a couple times you'll get a fan who, like, they touch the puck in their own defensive zone and they'll say shoot. So, but what they normally do is they try to get they have really large forwards. I mean, they have like 6, 7, 8 guys that are over 200 pounds, and they just get them in front of the crease, and then they get howitzers from the point, and it's really hard to move those big bodies off the rebounds. So that you see a lot of Marlowe and a lot of Thornton and Setoguchi and Klo and Pollock. They set up in front of the crease, and it's really hard for players to move them off the puck. In Edmonton last night, they kind of like imploded, taking some really bad penalties. And the Sharks didn't capitalize on that 5-on-3, but they capitalized right after he got out of the box. So they shorthanded, and then, you know, just kind of went downhill from there for Edmonton.
Yeah, Edmonton had some really strange play last night, especially the one that I saw especially was the Dwayne Rollison trying to clear the puck straight up the center ice. Really lucky that somebody didn't fire it directly back into the net. The Oilers just didn't seem like they were really on their game, and especially they didn't seem like it in the first period, but neither did the Sharks. The second period, the Sharks came back. I believe it was shots on goal were 17-7 for the Sharks in that second period, and Edmonton never really did turn it back on. It was a rocking crowd last night. It was a pretty impressive outing. I know it was a sellout. Is that kind of the norm these days for San Jose hockey?
Yeah, San Jose is really, it's a long string of sellouts, and it's very narrow, very high building, so it like reverberates off the ceiling. And they kind of go to their own drummer. Like sometimes if the game kind of lulls, they'll start their own chants, or they'll pick a player out and start booing him every time he touches a puck. It's not a traditional fan base that sits back and watches the game. They get really involved. And it's unusual for some fans, but I really like it. I mean, they have a good time, and I think they should.
No, I thought it was a great atmosphere. I know that in some arenas they only want to back a winner. Sometimes the Avalanche games seem that way, and it's almost like a wine and cheese party until the Avs start scoring and winning, which hasn't been happening enough this season. No matter what, it seemed like the crowd was backing the Sharks. The crowd here is pretty decent too. The players are stopping and signing autographs. There are about 4 or 5 kids out on the ice. Are the Sharks backing? Are the Sharks really good about backing kind of the youth movement, the local hockey, and growing the sport at the grassroots level?
Yeah, the Sharks are kind of like the number one kind of movement driving youth hockey in Northern California. They support the Junior Sharks program, which has men's and boys and girls teams at each level. And, you know, they support them, and they just started a team in China, or started supporting a team in China. So they're actually getting involved in the Asian Hockey League too. Mm-hmm. Which really helps kind of build from the ground up.
That's where kind of Claude Lemieux started his comeback, and then moved up to Worcester, and now here. We're coming up to the trade deadline. It's not far away. Obviously, the Sharks are not sellers, but are they buyers? Is there really anything that this team needs at this point once they get a few more of these guys back and healthy?
Well, there was just a rumor recently about a veteran center, and I think the problem is that any player coming in, there would have to be salary moving out, and they have a really firm lineup. So, you know, unless there's been some notes about a veteran defenseman, it'd be really hard for GM Doug Wilson to maneuver without very tight under the salary cap. So they have a need if Torrey Mitchell's not going to be able to come back this season, the third-line checking center. They might need a depth fourth-line, third-line center. I think their defense is all right. They have Alexei Semenov, who's been a huge – he's 6'5". He's really a great seventh depth defenseman. And they have Derek Joslin, who's a really polished defenseman in the AHL. I think they'd be fine just staying pat and hoping people return. But maybe a veteran defenseman or third, fourth line center if they could squeeze it in under the salary cap.
Now you yourself, you're kind of the unusual breed. You're a longtime hockey blogger, and you have your media credentials with the Sharks. You get to shoot the team. You also shoot pictures for the at the Stockton Thunder games. How did you take that on? I mean, how did that all come about?
Well, I was a photographer in high school and college, and I wrote a little bit for the college paper and a couple like freelance articles. But really, it came about online. There's a website here, Chucky, and he started the first kind of online BBS message boards about 1991. And I was going to school in Northern California. They didn't really have a lot of hockey or any hockey coverage in the newspaper, so that was really my only way to find out about other teams, to get kind of more in-depth analysis on the Sharks. And then about 95, 96, LCS Hockey was one of the first kind of email newsletters, like group coverage of all the different teams across the league. Just kind of took it a little further, you know, and then I started my site in October 1988. And a bunch of people have called it the first hockey blog, and it's probably about 2-3 years before Blogger was public. So I had to do it by hand. And then I got access to the minor leagues, I think, in 1999. And the Sharks gave me a credential in 2000. And I started doing just more, you know, all kinds of hockey and then local sports that didn't get as much coverage in the newspaper, like, you know, kickboxing, boxing, soccer, tennis, college rugby, college tennis, just a bunch of random different sports. I did sumo wrestling at the Madison Square Garden. It's just a bunch of different stuff.
I don't want to ask you for a prediction necessarily. It seems like it seems like we're going to see Sharks versus Red Wings at some point in the playoffs. There's all kinds of possibilities right now for the Sharks. But how do you think that this is a franchise that's really building something that it can sustain with the fan base right now, or is this kind of, do you feel like this might be one of those fickle fan bases that if the Sharks start losing in a couple years may turn their backs on the team?
Well, I've been coming to games since 91 in the Cow Palace. The first 2 years were played in San Francisco. And the second year, I think on a points-per-game ratio, I think it's the second worst in NHL history. They had 12 losses, 12 wins and like 70-something losses.
Ooh.
And the fans were great. Fans were Theo Fleury would come in the building, and it was like Sean Avery now, but maybe times two. So the fan base has been pretty solid. You know, the economy is really tough, so it's something that, you know, it's a concern. But I think the fan support's not going to dwindle. They got the core locked up both up front and on defense for, you know, 3-4 years, and it's an entertaining sport. I mean, I've taken probably 40 to 50 people to their first hockey game, and you sit down low, and the first puck that comes off the glass, the first check, the eyes get wide, and people say, my God, they're really playing that fast, they're hitting that hard. And you say, yes, that's real.
It is a heck of a sport. It's coming down, being able to be down so low so often, and I mean, you go to a lot of games, a lot of the home games and other games. You're in the locker room. Do you still feel the same excitement for the sport and the game that you felt when you first started seeing hockey or when you first started covering it?
I've seen some reporters or photographers a little bit jaded. You know, they're going probably more events than I go to, but every time I'm down on the ice, it's like, to be honest, it's like I'm there for the first time.
Yeah. Well, John, thanks a lot. Of course, Sharks Page is at www.sharkspage.com. And Sterling, thanks a lot for talking to me and bringing me down to practice.
No problem. Thanks for coming to San Jose.
And I'll tell you something about San Jose in the winter. It can get a little nippy. Well, that does it for this special edition, episode 21.5 of The Rink. You can find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can find all of the links to the bloggers and the podcasters that we were talking to. And you can also find a link to my West Coast hockey tour that I'm talking about on my blog. Next stop, Bakersfield, California. You can always email The Rink at rink@rinkpodcast.com. And you can call The Rink at 845-704-7465. That's 845-704-RINK. As always, thanks a lot for listening to The Rink.